Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined today by Sean Matian. You know him on Twitter, at Sean Matian, ESQ, as in Esquire. He's Lakers Twitter's favorite lawyer, and is somebody who has been on the this-is-probably-going-to-end-in-disaster train pretty early regarding Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, and then you know, moving forward, it doesn't look like it's going to get much better. Sean, I guess congratulations for that, and then two, how are you doing?
I kind of tweeted all the time. I always said I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Yep. I think I'm right, but I hope I'm wrong. So I'll take your congratulations, I guess, and do the victory lap thing, probably hand in hand with you, because you definitely had your skepticism that you were throwing out there early on as well. And two, doing great, man. Beautiful sunny day today in L.A. It would have been nicer if we had a playoff game this week, or maybe even tonight, in a perfect world. But LeBron's on vacation, and we're here talking about it.
LeBron's going to go on a TNT, apparently. He's going to answer Chuck's call, so that's fun.
Nice. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting watch. That's definitely something I'm sure will be all over Twitter, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Today, what we're going to talk about, so I just finished writing. I just posted an article, I guess it's more of a column, for Silver Screen and Roll about how Genie is in a spot now where the accountability and the blame, if this doesn't work out, is going to land squarely on her shoulders in ways that we haven't seen it to this point. And, you know, I used a Harry Potter comparison, but it's really been, it just kind of boils down to, at one point she had the plausible deniability twofold, where she didn't hire Mitch Kupchak, she didn't hire Jim Buss. They were put in place by other people. And then she was able to wash her hands completely by saying she was going to focus on the business side of things. And then when she helped get rid of those guys, she put in place Magic and Pelinka, which we know how that's ending. And you know what? If you screw up the first time that you're put in that predicament, there's a level of, look, you were just new, you were inexperienced, you valued the wrong things, you prioritized the wrong things, and it didn't work out. But now that Magic has stepped away, and it seems as if Rob Pelinka is going to be calling shots at this point, and Genie is okay with that. If Rob Pelinka doesn't work out in this case, when they were given an opportunity to really clean house, that's where she has no plausible deniability at this point. There is no one else that can receive blame, that anybody can be, anybody who can be used as a meat shield in the way that others have been. So I guess let's start here. Why do you think Rob Pelinka still has a job? Because it's not something that many people are really understanding at this point.
First of all, about the topic of your article and the contents of it, I think you're completely spot on. So I'm sure we'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. But secondly, to answer your question directly, I think the answer is really two-phased. The first phase is money. And Rob is still owed a ton of money. Now, the thing that Magic did for her that was wonderful, obviously he burned the house down, which was terrible for her, but the one nice thing he did for her was he resigned. Mm-hmm. And what happens when you resign, if you're under contract as an employee, you know, depending on if there's specific language in your contract that would kind of go around what I'm about to tell everybody, but if there isn't any specific language, once someone resigns from a position, they typically don't get the remaining value that's, you know, worth on their contract. And you hear that all the time, even in the NBA, that's how it works. So Magic, I think, was making around $50 million, $10 million a year. And the moment he resigned, he came off of Genie's books. Obviously, executive salaries don't go against any cap, but they do go against the wallet of the owner and the investors. So that $50 million was gone. Now, Rob is still owed a hefty amount of money for, I think, another 4 years. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it's somewhere around $20 million. And that's a big chunk of money for an ownership that really has their finances centered around a team. And it's not like the Lakers own 100% of this team. They don't own anywhere close to 100% of this team. So there's a lot of people in the family, and there's a lot of also secondary investors and minority investors that share the piece of this pie. And every time Jeannie's fired someone, even Mitch, you know, there has to be a payout of the remaining value. And I think it comes down to A, money, and B, this is something I know, you know, with concrete information, Jeannie hates change. Yeah. And to Jeannie, the biggest sign of insecurity that you could show and panic that you could show your NBA partners, Adam Silver, and the public at large is constant change, whether that's change in the executive office or change in the head coaching position. And I think the combination of those two, with the fact that she must believe Rob Pelinka is loyal to her, probably ended up making this decision where they're going to ride it out with Rob, hope that Rob and LeBron could do all they can to attract free agents and spend that $20 million wisely instead of paying out his money. Because I think it's very safe to say Rob Pelinka is not going to get another job in the NBA.
Not at this point.
If he were to leave the Lakers, right. Not after, you know, everything that's been exposed about him. So, you know, Jeannie could have fired him, paid him the $20 million, and then had to rehire an entire new front office, which you're talking millions upon millions on top of that, or ride this out, which it obviously looks like she's going to do.
The other thing that's coming, that's being reported quite a bit today, is Kurt Rambis's role in all of this. He is obviously husband to Linda Rambis, who is considered Jeannie Buss's closest friend. And for somebody whose credentials are very vague, vague is one way to put it, if not non-present altogether. Linda Rambis has played a very large role in advising Jeannie and helping Jeannie make some of these decisions. Kurt Rambis steps in and was hired kind of under the radar over the course of last season, and now is seen as somebody who's going to be calling shots alongside Rob Pelinka. And it just kind of gets back to you talked about the desire for avoiding change at all costs. But I think I would add to that, though, that the thing that she prioritizes more than anything is loyalty to her, right? And loyalty to, and once somebody shows loyalty to her and does that over a long period of time, she now unquestionably shares that same loyalty in the other direction. And in this case, where it's Linda, and it's what's interesting here is that Rob Pelinka is an extension of Kobe. Kurt Rambis is an extension of Linda Rambis, and those two extensions are now going to be there as proxy for the people that I think she would rather be have in charge anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems that way. It definitely seems like loyalty is really one of those things that, you know, she cares a lot about. And if you look at the situation, if you look at the fact that the trust gives power to the entire family, really. And the family, if the siblings get together and vote, they could sell the team. You know, Jeannie doesn't have a stronghold on the team as other owners share. And other owners own the team because they paid for the team, and it's their team, and it's as simple as that. But that's not Jeannie's situation. Jeannie doesn't necessarily own the team in and of itself. A trust owns the team, and she has to worry about, you know, a possible takeover. And it's not far-fetched because a possible takeover was actually a probable takeover, I think, a year and a half ago, where Jeannie had to, you know, defend herself in court and buy the votes. And I don't mean buy it by monetarily paying, you know, the siblings off for their votes, but, you know, making sure that the siblings who voted to keep the team and to not sell the team were on her side. And, you know, it was a very fragile time, and it was a legal, you know, battle. This isn't something that happens lightly when, you know, you're talking about a $3, 4, or $5 billion valuation of corporations. So I'm sure there's a lot of paranoia in that, and in that paranoia you look for loyalty, and you're spot on about the loyalty thing. And I think something people don't really realize about how close and how privied Linda Rambis is to Jeannie. Obviously, they're always with each other and they're always together, and, you know, even at Laker games. But I think there was an email leak, which is kind of crazy. We're talking about email leaks like it's, you know, WikiLeaks and Trump again.
Yeah.
But I think there was an email leak where Irving Azoff, who is just a massive, you know, entertainment mogul,
yep,
emailed Jeannie Buss about what would really change the landscape of Los Angeles, trying to convince them to move from downtown Los Angeles to Inglewood. And I know people, you know, view something like that lightly, oh, it's just an email. But to think about the amount of wealth and the amount of business that downtown would lose and Inglewood would gain as a result of that, I mean, you're just talking about a multi-billion dollar kind of transfer of wealth from one city to another city. And who was on that email between these two moguls?
This is crazy.
Linda Rambis. Linda Rambis.
Wild.
And I think before Jeannie could even reply, Linda's replying, giving her stamp of approval. So to say that Linda is an advisor, I think, is almost an understatement. It's almost like Linda acts as a pseudo partner in this with Jeannie. And, you know, let's also add another name to the web here, Phil Jackson, who is Kurt Rambis's best friend and a very, very good friend to both Rambis's. And, you know, Phil is also great friends with Kurt. And so when Phil made the move to New York, the first thing he did was gave Kurt one of the biggest contracts of, you know, an assistant coach was making in the NBA, paid him very handsomely. And now Jeannie's there without Phil in L.A. and Linda's there without her husband in L.A. So I'm sure that moment, you know, spending a couple of years together without, you know, their significant others here, probably brought them even closer. And the craziest thing about all this was, for some reason, Kurt decides to invite Phil over to the practice facility, you know, in the middle of last season, and have a meeting with him while all the cameras are rolling and picking this stuff up too. So the dynamic is pretty kooky and pretty weird, and I think unstable, you know, which is a word a lot of people are using, you know, this morning and all weekend, is a pretty fair term.
Yeah, I completely agree. We're going to take a quick second here, pay a couple bills, and when we come back, I want to circle back to what we started with on the topic of accountability and blame that would be coming their way, especially when you factor in a few of the things that I've been hearing in not so much whispers as like people outright yelling some stuff that might not please Lakers fans very much. So hold tight. So we've gotten to a point, it's becoming one of the worst kept secrets in the NBA, really, is that a lot of these top executives are looking at the Lakers and they're saying, that's a gig I would like, right? You look at what the Lakers actually have and what they present. It's a worldwide brand. It's the opportunity to get the marquee franchise in the NBA back to the promised land. They still have LeBron. They have this young core. They have cap space and flexibility, and they have assets to move forward and trade should the situation call for that, right? And one of the things that I'm hearing, and not so much whispers, is the thing that's preventing the Bob Myers is Pat Riley already distanced himself from the Lakers and other executives around the league. The thing that is stopping them from outright positioning themselves and vying for those positions is Rob Pelinka and his presence there and the feeling that he's there no matter what moving forward. And I'll just put it like this. Like, if you're a top executive and you're asked to take on this role of such magnitude as president of basketball operations of the Lakers would be, you would want to employ your number two, right? And a lot of these guys are just kind of walking away from this saying, I mean, I don't want to do that if it means that Rob Pelinka is assigned to me as my number two. And we already saw it, how it played out, where Magic was essentially assigned Pelinka. He basically said this outright in his press conference. And again, it just gets back to the point of, I mean, I know he was close to Kobe for all those years, but the idea that he would preclude the Lakers from these top-level elite candidates and the Lakers are just okay with it, it's just wild to me.
Well, yeah, and you're right. And, you know, going off of what you just said, think about it this way. There are only 30 of these positions available in the world. I mean, the NBA is a global sport, and it's probably going to end up, you know, it is already going outside of the United States of America. We have teams in Canada, and it's probably going to expand after that. There are only 30 of these positions in the world. And your reputation as a GM and as an executive is everything. And this is why so many people loved working with Mitch, because there are so many trade scenarios that teams don't want in the media, that teams don't want anybody, especially their fans and their own players, to hear about, that don't go through. So when you're calling a GM, you really want to be able to trust that person and say, hey, these are my guys that are on the block that I'm willing to give up in order to get, you know, X or Y guy from you. But we got to keep this thing under wraps, because I don't want my team to hear about this or my players to, you know, unravel here in the middle of the season or whatever part of the season they're on. You know, really, reputation and trust between these guys is everything. And that's why so many executives really come out and stick up for one another. That's why when a coach gets fired or mistreated, so many coaches come out and stick up for one another, because it is a type of fraternity and you're supposed to trust and defend one another. No one is going to put their name on the line for someone like Rob Pelinka, who habitually is known to be the complete opposite.
Yeah.
You know, the reputation he made for himself is one that is completely untrustworthy, not only, you know, as an agent, but even when he came onto the NBA. I mean, the first big summer he had, he gets hit with the largest tampering fine the NBA has ever levied against any team.
Yep.
And the team was, you know, constantly being investigated or being hit. And I'm sure there are certain circumstances and scenarios that the NBA didn't even release to the public and just dealt with it in-house. And so thinking about how small this community is, you know, A, no one wants to work with someone that it's not their hand pick, which is what you said, and I think you're absolutely right. And B, no one is going to put their name on the line and enter, you know, a new team and really risk the value of their own reputation and their own name working with someone who has such a reputation for being untruthful. So I think it's really, there's a lot of problems with that. And having Rob Pelinka means we're probably not going to have anyone else that's worth talking about.
Yeah, I'll put it like this too. I mean, to again, circle back to the topic that we started at the top with is, so you add all these things together. We understand why Jeannie would make these decisions. That doesn't mean that we agree with them or that we think that makes those decisions any smarter. We just understand where those are coming from. And then you see what it could be costing the Lakers, right? The opportunity cost here is immense. And it just where we wind up getting to is, if Pelinka is kept, and if Pelinka is kept with these top-level candidates who want to come and work for the Lakers, right? Like, even Bob Myers was given the opportunity to completely distance himself from the Lakers, and he told some joke and he laughed about it, but he didn't necessarily say, like, nope, I'm definitely not doing that, right? And these people are really interested in the Lakers gig, but if it's Pelinka that's getting in the way of that, and the person who's making that call is Jeannie Buss, then the person who deserves the blame at the end of all of this, if Pelinka doesn't wind up working out, which a lot of people don't think is going to happen, then all of this blame, all of this attention, she winds up going from being able to operate in the backgrounds and live a charmed life with the media out here. She goes from that to, No, there is no other way to read this than it's Jeannie at fault, and the pressure to sell is going to start mounting.
And I think it already has.
You know, yeah.
I think Magic was, you know, that wall for her, and he was the shield, and he was probably the biggest shield that Jeannie could have picked. And if she picked Magic to act as a shield, you know, to kind of take any negative publicity away from the Lakers and figured out how to twist it and spin it, because he was kind of like Teflon Magic there for a while. He was probably worth every penny of that $50 million, even if he wasn't a great executive. Yeah. But when Magic stepped down, not only did he take the shield with him, but he threw a big arrow, you know, at the same time. He really allowed that match to strike the house, and he exposed everyone. And what he did is exactly what you're saying. By him stepping down, to me, in my estimation, Jeannie Buss got elevated to president of basketball operations, because really, essentially, that's what she's doing, right? She's picking people to run the basketball side. This is her choice now. You know, like you said before, she really didn't get a chance to pick until she picked Magic, and Magic kind of told the world she doesn't know what she's doing because she picked Rob, and she won't let me fire Rob. Mm-hmm. And so not having Magic there, having Rob there, it definitely puts her at the forefront of the finger pointing. And even, you know, which I'm very surprised to hear at 710, which is 710 AM radio in Los Angeles, which, you know, is obviously ESPN radio. I'm sorry if I'm plugging something that isn't, you know, your properties here. But to see a station like that, that is heavily partnered with the Lakers financially, just rip her on the radio day in and day out, it you know, further proves what you're trying to say. I mean, it's really, who else is there to blame? Mitch is gone. Jim is gone. Their siblings don't talk. We all hate Rob already. You know, I mean, there's nobody left. It is her, and she's going to feel the brunt of it.
Yeah, it's we've been watching basically an implosion, right? Years upon years upon years of the circle of trust within the Lakers organization has been shrinking, and it's gotten to a point now where it's of those people, of the circle of trust that actually can make decisions here, it's basically just Jeannie. And what that means is now she does have Linda, who is that advisor slash partner. She's extended that circle a little bit by now involving Kurt in those discussions. She's bringing Phil back into the fold, apparently, to also consult a little bit. And then now it's Rob, who is, again, a proxy of Kobe's. But it's still like it's still a tiny circle compared to other organizations around the NBA. And again, it just falls back to the person at the center of that circle. The bullseye who will be getting a lot of the blame if this doesn't work out is Jeannie. And I don't know if she's really ready for it. So what I want to do, I'm going to take another quick second here. I want to come back and talk about if there are any legal ramifications, because a lot of people are saying, well, if this fails, then how does Jeannie actually get held accountable? And well, if she's kind of sort of an owner, it's hard to figure that out. So we'll come back and talk about that. So if this doesn't work out and Jeannie is actually held accountable here, she's an owner. Is there anything that can be done to put enough pressure on her to really decide it's time to move on?
Well, the answer to that is yes. Huh. She isn't an owner individually.
Yeah.
Well, your question wasn't, can she legally be ousted? Well, and the answer to that would also be yes. It's twofold. Mm-hmm. She's not an individual owner like most owners are. She runs the Lakers for the benefit of the trust. So she's a part owner in this trust, and this trust owns the Lakers. If you have a computer in front of you, you could Wikipedia who owns teams. And if you look down the list of those teams, you're going to see individual names. You're going to see names like Steve Ballmer next to the Clippers, Mark Cuban next to the Mavericks. But you're not going to see Jeannie Buss next to the Lakers. You're going to see Buss Family Trust. Mm-hmm. And Buss Family Trust is this document. And this document has laws and regulations built within that gives the power to all five children equally. So Jeannie doesn't have more power. Her right to vote is the same right to vote as any one of her brothers or sisters and some of her brothers that she doesn't like much. But the power is the same. So if there's enough votes in the trust to sell the team, which I think that trust meets every single year to look over the finances and to make a decision of who to elect to run the team and if the family should continue to own the team, if they feel that the pressure just is too much and the Buss family name is being ruined, they're already close enough to sell the team in terms of votes. There are, I think, five children. There's two votes to sell the team already. So they just need another two votes. And those two votes could come from anyone if they feel that pressure, and it could possibly come from Jeannie. So legally within the family trust, yes. Also, there is pressure from outside people who are investing in the Lakers, companies like AEG, who have the first right of refusal, mm-hmm. and other, you know, billionaires who own the team, who have meetings with Jeannie as well. And they are investors. These are very savvy, strong, business-minded people that aren't going to take too kind to what is essentially the president of the team really operating in an extremely non-competent manner. The NBA and the NBA partners also have rules and liabilities that, you know, guidelines that they go by, you know, within their own collective bargaining agreement. Can you get, you know, disciplined by the NBA or, you know, handed down some sort of forced sale? If the answer to that is yes, if the acts rise to such an outrageous level. We kind of recently saw that with Donald Sterling a few years back. Yep. I don't think anything Genie's doing is going to ever reach, you know, that degree of severity. So I don't think the NBA is going to ever do anything. Being an idiot isn't a violation of the NBA's guidelines, unfortunately. You know, we have an owner in New York who's been kind of nuts for a while now, but you know, you can't do anything about that. But again, that owner in New York, Dolan, he's the last word. You know, Genie is not in that situation. So if the pressure mounts and if the siblings, you know, don't feel as secure as they do now, that house could easily cave from within. And they are two votes away from the, of the five votes I think they have of total in a forced sale. And again, you know, it's not that far-fetched considering the family could walk away with $4 or $5 billion and never have to worry about money, you know, obviously ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the fascinating thing here is that, you know, Ramona at the time, before Magic, I think was hired or as the Jim and Mitch Kupchak thing was really seen as a failure. I think at the time, Ramona Shelburne reported that there are a couple siblings who were just saying, this isn't worth the trouble anymore. And, there's a huge payday at the end of this if we do choose to sell. And by the way, like we're talking, you mentioned the evaluations of the Lakers at this point, but if they hit the open market, like if AEG doesn't decide to buy right away, which they have the first right to pick up that tab, but if they opt to pass on this, you could see this the Lakers go for an astronomical number, even higher than even you and I even perceive right now. And the siblings might be looking at that and saying, that seems so much nicer than having to infight and bicker about which coach to hire and which president to hire and which GM to go with and never having to talk to Rob Pelinka ever again. Like those things are conversations that I'm sure the siblings in the background are having. And the one thing too that Jeannie said has said repeatedly. Now she's also said that under no circumstances would she sell the team, but she's also said though that if she is unfit. If it gets to a point where she cannot live up to the promises that she made her dad and the brand that her dad built, then she would step aside or in any way that she can to get the Lakers back to that spot. And you know, if this doesn't work out, if they do keep Pelinka and they keep him at the cost of some of these other high end candidates, that's the kind of situation that I think can kind of force her hand there.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's interesting she's used those words because two other top Lakers executives have said something very similar to that. One was Jim Buss, and those words came to bite him back in the butt. The other was Magic Johnson. Mm-hmm. Magic Johnson said that as well, and now Genie says that. So I don't think it's that far fetched if they continue to go down this road and if there's continued losses. I mean, the revenue they're losing, not only Staples Center revenue for playoff games, but the media revenue, the revenue for the NBA. You know, there's a lot of money being lost, and there are a lot of people within the organization who own the team. For example, Dr. Patrick Soon, who also owns the LA Times. I mean, this is a person who could easily, you know, cut a check to cash, you know, for $4 or $5 billion and not think twice about it. Mm-hmm. There are people waiting on the sidelines who would pay top dollar for something like this. And, you know, something maybe listeners don't really kind of grasp is the value of the Lakers is so high, but that doesn't mean that the people who own the Lakers are necessarily making that much money every year. And a great example I give people is this. You own a home. Let's say you bought that home for $500,000 5 years ago, and you come to reappraise your home and it's worth, let's just say, $1 million. Well, great. You know, you have $500,000, but you don't really have it. You don't really get it unless you could sell the home.
Yep.
Right. So yeah, the Lakers have gone up, you know, tremendously. I mean, in thousands and thousands of percent, but they don't get a rate of return every year on that money the way they would get a maximum payout on a sale. So when you tell someone that, hey, you could be an overnight billionaire and I'd never have to worry about press asking you questions, looking your name up in, you know, in the news and seeing all this negative publicity, what's going to happen next year? A lot of people would sign on that dotted line fairly quickly, especially if they have no involvement in the team or if they feel that their involvement in the team may go away. Something else I know we kind of talked about this earlier in our discussion, but we didn't really bring it up, was about Bob Myers and other, you know, top executives possibly entertaining the Lakers if Rob wasn't here. You know, it's interesting because two people who I really trust who are in the NBA business reached out to me fairly, you know, early on, and both of them, you know, told me the same thing about the Golden State situation specifically, that, you know, there are issues in Golden State and, you know, things that are going great run their course. And it looks like, you know, there are some things that Bob Myers may want from the ownership up there that they're not necessarily willing to give them. And there are some dynamics within, you know, the upper executive group at Golden State, which, you know, hasn't come out because they're so good at keeping everything in house. And they're really just, when it comes to professionalism, they are elite, but, you know, things aren't as pretty on the inside as they are on the outside. So specifically Bob Myers, two people I really trust who are in the business of the NBA have told me that he is right for the picking, and that if the situation was right, especially if the situation was in California, you know, it would be something he'd take a long, hard look at. But, you know, like you said, having someone like Pelinka there is a non-starter. And it all comes back to, well, now this is all on Jeannie Buss. You know, what's going to happen? Are they going to be successful? If they are not, what happens to Jeannie and what happens with the team?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a situation that is going to be evolving a ton. I think one thing that everybody should kind of take note of right now, you've heard the reports of the Lakers asking for permission to talk to Monty Williams, to talk to Juwan Howard, they didn't have to ask permission to talk to Tyronn Lue, but with those coaching searches, they've gotten permission to at least have their initial conversations with those guys. We haven't seen it reported anywhere that they have asked for permission to talk to any of these top level executives. And given how leaky the Lakers have been since Rob Pelinka and these guys, Rob Pelinka has a direct line to Adrian Wojnarowski. So the fact that we haven't seen any of these leaks come out, it would lead one to believe that as of right now, they haven't had those conversations. They haven't asked for permission. Though that doesn't mean that, you know, executives can't back channel and see what's what and go about things that way. But as of right now, they haven't asked for permission on these guys. And that feels noteworthy. And until they do, those of you who aren't fans of Pelinka, you might want to be a little bit nervous there. And then you combine that with the reports that you're hearing about Kurt Rambis and the direction that the Lakers seem to be going in right now, Pelinka being in charge of the coaching search. Like, we know where this is heading. We've known for a while. It's just like I've used the analogy with Pete. It's like two cars that you see backing up into each other, and you're just thinking to yourself, there's no way they're actually going to do this. They're not at, whoop, they're getting closer, they're getting closer, and then finally they hit, and you say, wow, that actually happened. Right. Pelinka, in this case, is going to be, is that car accident. You're like, there's no way they're actually, they can't actually, and then wow, he apparently little-fingered his way up to the to the upper echelon of NBA executives. And I think that's how this turns out. How do you think this turns out?
I think it all comes down to LeBron, to be honest with you, because I think great. And I was saying this when Magic was here too. I was saying this when Magic was here, and you know, you and a couple of other thousand people who follow me, you know, could attest to it, that I did not think it was going to end well. But with that being said, good players cover up everything. You know, Jerry West always said, you know, after the Lakers hired Phil and it came out that Jerry and Phil didn't have a great relationship, Jerry West said the same thing. He said, you know, when it comes down to it all, the NBA is about players and it's not about coaches or executives. If you have the right players, it'll mask every other deficiency you have. And so if LeBron has a couple of things lined up in his back pocket and things work out and, you know, we make it to the second or third round of the playoffs, then so be it. If we're talking about, Rob Pelinka as an executive, I don't think there is another team in their right mind that would ever even consider Rob Pelinka. So I can't sit here and imagine in the long play Pelinka's going to be around. But again, if they land a marquee free agent, and now you have two big stars who could make phone calls for you and could, maybe get another guy on a lesser deal just to come by, like kind of the NBA has been in this LeBron era, you never know what's going to happen then, and the tides could change quickly. But that's best case scenario. And the Lakers have really sucked at best case scenario lately, whether it is in free agency or it's in coaching or if it's in, the game. Oh, best case scenario, if Lonzo and Ingram and, Kuz play great and LeBron stays healthy, we're going to be fine. And it just never happens for the Lakers for whatever reason. But for whatever reason is actually for deficient reasons, for not having a great training staff, not having a great coaching staff, not having a great front office. So I don't think it's going to work out. But when you have LeBron, you have the most popular player in the game and arguably still one of the best players in the game, and you are in L.A., one or two marquee players could mask this. Now, who do you fit around those marquee players if you get them? I don't think anybody who knows anything about basketball thinks Rob Pelinka could figure it out. Now, who knows if Rob was the one that chose Rondo and Steph and Bees and all these guys, but he was in the room, right? He holds the title of GM. You would think he has something to do with those signings. So I guess my short answer to that, which hasn't been too much of a short answer, is, I'm not a believer that this thing is going to work out at the end of it all.
Yeah, it's something to be nervous about. What it comes down to is we now have to hope that Pelinka, and there are some people who are close to the Lakers who are saying this is actually the case, that Magic was so bad at his job that Pelinka basically had to carry two jobs and as such wasn't as good at either as he could be, right? Maybe that's how this works out. Maybe if given the proper tools, Pelinka could actually turn this around. It's just, we know there are better options out there. And that's what, and at the end of the day, that's what Jeannie is going to have to answer for if she does actually go down this path, is there were better options out there. You went for the choice of proximity and loyalty. And while you can explain those decisions, that doesn't necessarily make those decisions any more valid. And that's what we're going to, if this doesn't work out, that's what we're going to get. And it's great that you were able to come on here and add value to, all right, what happens if that is the case? So thanks very much for hopping on, man. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, telling you to have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.